Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Balanced Blues Brothers podcast. I'm Jordan. I'm going to host today. So on Twitter, it's Sports by Stats. And I'm here with Score and Ola. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, hi. Good to be here again. Not in such great circumstances this week, but it's good to chat to you guys again, as always.
Yeah, so I think that we're just going to go in hot. West Ham match. Ironically, not the most surprising result to me. We seem to struggle against West Ham away very frequently, especially under Moyes. Moyes just seems to kind of know how to stop us. It was a weird match. I think when we all saw the lineups, people weren't really surprised because it was almost the same as the week prior. But I think the reasoning was a little bit different. Against Liverpool, it was for man-marking purposes. Against West Ham, I think it was because we wanted height against their set pieces, which is why Potch started three center backs. And I really think the formation was not necessarily the problem, but it didn't necessarily help things either. They don't attack like Liverpool does. West Ham didn't attack like Liverpool does. They beat us on the set piece. We could not complete a cross out of the box, whether on set pieces or just open play. And their height beat us. Zuma, like, credit to the former Chelsea player, Zuma played incredible. He was outstanding. And I think at the end of the day, the only positive I have is that our defensive possession looks really good. And I know people don't want to hear that after a 3-1 loss, but I do think it's worth noting. I think the center backs, and I'm including Caldwell in that just for the purposes of this analysis, those guys look really good with the ball. They're progressing the ball really well. They're hitting really good diagonals. I think kind of my big negative is Silva is going to be a detriment. If he's pushing that high up, you're going to see something like on that goal where De Sassi has to cover for him or where Caldwell has to cover for him. It happened a few times. And so, but I think Silva's individual performance was also pretty good. So center backs to me looked all right. I mean, nobody's good in a 3-1 loss, but out of all the position groups, they looked all right. Enzo seems to be the guy that we're organizing our entire attack through. And to that end, I thought Enzo looked good. I know he missed the penalty. I'm not holding that against him too much. At the end of the day, it was a 3-1 loss when West Ham had 10 players on the pitch. So some level of penalty, missing a penalty sucks, but there's a lot of other problems to me that warrant discussion. But I will pause for there. Ola, why don't you give me your thoughts on the match? Why didn't you give everybody your thoughts on the match?
Yeah, I think the match was, first of all, what I noticed about several times, Kisasi was running across the back line to cover. He did that to make a clearance. He did that to make a tackle. And in the Mikel Antonio goal, he was the one when Antonio took the shot. And that has led people to blame him and say he had a stinker of a game. And I think one of two things. If De Sassi is cover, because in a back three formation, you can't have the guy on one side do cover. So there's a problem there. If it's not by design and it just turned out to be that way, that's also a problem because it means a lack of defensive organization. So I'll wait to see how things unfold, especially when Badiashile comes back from injury. But I think that looked wrong to me because it's unbalanced if the right center back is on cover duties Like Jordan mentioned, I thought Thiago Silva was okay, but at the end of the day, when you have a 39-year-old centre back who was not even fast in his heydays playing a high line, it means when people step past him, there's not much he can do. So you could blame him and say, "Oh, he didn't cover, he didn't do this," but we would just been speaking at that point because he's been put in that situation by the person who selected him. I'm not saying selecting Thiago Silva was a mistake, but I know many people who believe that Thiago Silva has to play whenever fit, because of what he represents, how good he has been. And I cannot overemphasize this. Thiago Silva has been very, very good for Chelsea, even this season. He was our best centre back in pre-season. But at the end of the day, just the way we didn't appoint him captain because we are moving forward, it would be better to move on from Thiago Silva sooner rather than later. And it's also better for him to leave on a high because he stands the risk of being here long enough to become the villain. It happened to Azpilicueta. Azpilicueta played well for decades, for several years, and when he was 33, we stopped him from 32. We stopped him from leaving, and then he was back up to Reece James, and then we needed him, and we called on him, and he still did his best. But people said he's washed, he's past it. And men put in like Azpilicueta, the shirt was good riddance by the time he left. We don't need Thiago Silva to be in that situation. So I think we should start moving on from Thiago Silva because the things he simply cannot do are not things we can ignore. And they are not things that are in our head. We saw several times when Kolwe was getting spun, Bisasi was getting knocked about. Thiago Silva wasn't there because he had been bypassed in the midfield. So there was that. I think our centre backs actually did well aerially, interestingly. I just think it was really a case of the making it a physical game, making it a scrap. Finished with 5 out of 6 aerial duels won. I think Disasi finished with 2 out of 2. I think Kolwe finished with 2 out of 2. So I think we're are good in the air, but the rest of the team is just rubbish, mostly. So when Ward-Prowse puts the cross in, and the backs are, he puts it to where Conor Gallagher is, and that's how the goal happens. So there was that. I think our user got chance, and that was the penalty. We had a lot of the ball. We had 76% of possession. We should one clear cut chance. That is not surprising that we found difficult to score goals, and this creation issue has been there for quite a while. There were many negatives from the match, and there were many negatives from the match. I can't go into all of them, so I'll just leave it there.
Yeah, so thanks, Ola. So, Score, let's get you in here a little bit. So, I think Ola and I have talked a lot about the center backs. What are your thoughts? Like, do you think this formation Poch is using is the way to go? Do you think Silva needs to play every match? Are you one of the people that also thinks that it may be time to move on from Silva?
Well, yeah, I think it's time to move on, honestly. I think, not saying don't play him at all. I think there's going to be some games where his experience might be useful, or coming off the bench when you're trying to see out a game and want to bring on an extra defender, or something like that. And definitely that kind of John Terry role that he had in his last season, where he's being a leader, being a voice of experience. He's got bags of knowledge and experience to pass on to our young players. But in terms of starting regularly, I don't think he should be doing that anymore. I think the other three, I think certainly Badia Ashile and Levi Cole have I mean, not higher ceilings than Thiago Silva, but they're going to get better, and they are the I think they're the future. Like Levi Cole, we know his potential. He's not there yet. He's still got a lot to learn, but he's going to learn that. He's going to learn that by playing, I think. Badia Ashile, we know how good he is. Either side, he can play right centre back or left centre back, doesn't matter. You could play him with Levi Colwill in a pair if you wanted to. You know, you could even play a back three with, you know, Disasi, Badia Shield and Levi Colwill if you wanted to. And that would work. I don't particularly like Levi Colwill playing at left back. I kind of understand why he's doing it, but I don't agree with it. I think I would actually rather see Ben Chilwell drop back and try like Ian Madsen in that kind of role that Ben Chilwell playing, because he played that in pre-season and he scored a few goals and he played well. And his crossing is really good. So there's no reason not to try that, especially not against Luton. Like, next game, you know, I mean, the next three games, really. We've got Luton, then we've got AFC Wimbledon in the League Cup, and then we've got Nottingham Forest. Now, this is not disrespect to any of those teams, because they're good teams, but we should be beating those teams. With the squad that we have, we should be beating those teams. I think you can try this stuff now a little bit more. I think I would not play Thiago Silva against Luton for sure. I wouldn't play him in any of the next three games, actually. I wouldn't play him in any of the next three games. Yeah, that's what I think about the centre back situation. I think we've got some really talented centre backs, and that includes Bashir Humphreys as well, who was on the bench. He was really good in pre-season. I really think he's got potential, and he could be, like, it depends on when Fofana comes back. He could be the fourth centre back next season. If Fofana needs to go on loan and get minutes and play like a bit of a lower level just to get his match fitness back, you've got Bashir Humphreys to come in for and if he does well, then maybe you don't even keep Fofana and you sell Fofana. I don't know, but we'll see. We'll see what happens with that. Because I think Fofana's still a very good player when he's fit. So, but that's the future. Yeah. So as for now, I think that's something that has to change. I think like Disasi gets the blame for that second goal, but like Thiago Silva just kind of stood there and didn't do anything. Like, and he was right there, and he wasn't quick enough to get back. I think if you'd have Badia Shield in there, though, they don't score that goal. I don't think they score that goal then, because he would have got back way quicker and would have got in the way. He'd have had two men converging on one player with the Zali as well, kind of going back as well. You had, let's say, three players. And they probably wouldn't have got the shot away. So, but that's football. The first half, I thought we played really well, apart from the first like 5-10 minutes. Like, that's a problem we've got to sort out as well, by the way. Poor starts to every half that we've played, like every half. we've come out and been slow for the first 5 or 10 minutes and then settled down, and we need to kind of avoid that. I think that's partly due to inexperience. We've got a young team. I think that's part of that, so they'll learn that. But yeah, first half we played some really good football. We created a lot of chances. We deserved the goal. It was a great goal, really great goal by Kani Chukwuemeka. Great skill, great finish, great move, really great bit of football. Raheem Sterling had his best game for Chelsea, probably. It looked like the Raheem Sterling that I thought we were getting a year ago. He was getting in behind. He was quick. He was, he won the penalty. He looked dangerous. Like, he looked really, really dangerous. And I think if we got that second goal, if we'd scored that penalty, I think in the second half, we would have then hit him on the counter-attack and he probably would have scored, I think. Because it would have been a different game if we scored that second goal. Because then West Ham can't just sit back anymore. They actually have to come out and, go for the equaliser, which would have allowed us to hit him on the counter, which we could have done with, Sterling, and then brought Mud. That would be the perfect time to bring Mudrick on to hit him on the counter attack with his pace, and then we probably would have won 3-1, maybe. But
I want to jump in here for a second because I think Ola's mic was starting to go off, but it sounds like it's back. So Ola, for that second goal, right? So the worst score kind of left off, right? So Chelsea, yeah. Enzo misses the penalty, and second half starts, and we still have to play on the front foot, and then we get whacked on the counter, and yeah. Thiago Silva seems out of position. De Sassi has to do the covering. Colwell's marking the winger, and Antonio scores what I actually think is a great goal. So what were you going to say on it, though?
Yeah, I just wanted to make a small point. I think when I raved about Badashile last season, many people said, you are saying all this, but he had Thiago Silva alongside him. He didn't do it alone. That made all that difference. And what I'll say is this: Badiashile played against West Ham last season. I think it was. It was a, I think it was the 1-1 that João Félix scored, if I'm not mistaken. Mikel Antonio tried to do his thing against Badiashile. Did not work. Because you can't dominate Badiashile on the ground, you can't dominate him in the air, except he has an off day. And I saw the way Cole got spun in that situation. I think the play breaks down when Thiago Silva actually steps out, and then he just poked past him and he's left on an island. And then Cole has to do something, but Mikel Antonio is much stronger than Cole. So that's an easy do for him. I think the Sassie is left holding the bag, if I would say, because he's supposed to be playing alongside two other center backs, and none of them are even in position to do any anything defensively. That's why I wouldn't put the blame on that goal on the Sassie. The thing is, most defensive situations, when goals like that are scored, especially counter-attack goals, play has broken down long before it gets to the box. I don't think Sanchez does well for that goal. But I think the play breaks the. I think Colwell and Silva have much more blame than De Sarsi in that situation, because De Sarsi doesn't particularly do anything wrong. He could have gotten tighter to Antonio, but if he gets tight, someone will say he has to commit. If he commits and he gets it wrong, it's a penalty anyway. He's in the box. He's covering his centre back. He shouldn't be alone in that situation. That's why he played three centre backs. So I think I agree with you, Scott, that if Badiashile is there, that goal probably doesn't happen, because Badiashile probably deals with the aerial situation or the ground situation much better. But again, we have three centre backs on the pitch. De Sarsi shouldn't be left in that kind of situation. So I think that's where play breaks down. I don't think De Sarsi is as much at fault for the goal as any of the other defensive players in that situation.
Yeah, so like I'll chime in here. Like, right, Mikel Antonio is stronger than 99% of all other Premier League players. That dude is a beast. He is one of these players that is, it's actually astounding to me that a bigger club's never come in for him, because he can just do everything. He can be kind of your last, like the forward on the shoulder of the defense. He could be a deep forward. I've seen him play as a defender. Like, he's a really versatile player because he's really strong and he's really smart. So
Yeah.
I keep hearing people say, oh, well, you can't play Badiashile and Cole all together. But I
Yes.
mean, look at Brentford, right? I mean, Brentford played Ben Mee and Ethan Pinnock, who are two left footers, right? They're two left-sided center backs. They play together,
Yeah.
and Brentford have one of the best defenses in the Premier League. So I don't buy that you can't play Badiashile and Cole all together. I think De Sarsi's passing, I mean, I have not seen the center back that good at passing in a very long time. Like, De Sarsi's passing's incredible. But so we've talked a lot about center back. So Score, I'm gonna throw it to you. What else? What about the midfield, right? What do you make of Caicedo's debut? What do you make of how the midfield kind of controlled or lack thereof the game? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think I wasn't expecting much from Caicedo because the last game he played of football was 29th of July, which is 3 weeks ago. And then he didn't train for a week because of that move. He was on strike and all that. So he wasn't fit. I knew he wasn't fit. I wasn't even sure he'd be fit to make the bench, because, I thought it was, so, I mean, it wasn't the best debut, but I'm not judging him on that at all. I mean, like, you've got to, he's not going to be fit for a couple of weeks, honestly. I'm not even sure he should start against Luton because he don't think he's going to be fit for that. I think Larby is actually probably fitter than he is because he's played a couple of games for Southampton, competitive games. Like, he played their first league game, I think. So I think he's probably more match fit than Caicedo is. So I mean, this is getting onto Luton, but I would probably, if you're going to start one of them against Luton, I would start Lavia, actually. But in terms of this game, Carly Chakremenko was excellent. I mean, I'm a big fan of his anyway. I thought he was excellent. I mean, we didn't look the same when he came off, interestingly enough. Like that was a moment in the game as well. Endo is Endo. Like, I've seen his stats already. He's got He's like the highest pass completion rate in the league by almost double the next player down is 21. He's got 36 or something like
And it's
that. Like,
not just only easy passes. Like, they're hard passes too.
God, yeah. I mean, he is just literally like, I mean, he's our best player, honestly. Like, Reece James when he's fit as well, but Endo's always fit, and he's a when he doesn't have a. Don't think he's had a bad game, really, a, like competitive game. Not really, like maybe one. I don't know, but generally he's so good you almost get used to it now. You kind of like expect it, right? And we don't realize how high that standard is when you until you look at that circle. You look at his circle for this season already, it's off the charts in terms of pass completion and like all that kind of thing, right? So he's brilliant. Like, I've got no worries about him at all. I'm excited to see what happens when we have Caicedo fit, because I think he will improve us. Certainly defensively, like counters, especially. Like we've had that problem for so long, because we haven't had anyone to protect the defense on counter attacks and transitions, and he will help with that. And playing him with Lavia would be interesting, because it would allow Lavia to be a bit more expressive. And like Lavia's balls in behind can be absolutely lethal. Like, I would, that's why I'd like to see him against Luton, because we might need that against Luton. You know, against low blocks as well. Like, his that will add a bit of creativity, I suspect. Like, you've got him and
One
Lavia,
thing,
him and Enzo both in midfield with Caicedo protecting them. Like, and we need as much creativity as we can get. And then we need people to put, but the other things, we'll get onto this later, we need people to actually take shots. Like, when, like, not like, even if not be afraid to miss. Like, don't worry if you like the reason Frank Lampard got so many goals for Chelsea is because he took on the shot every time, even if he missed it. Like, he didn't care if he missed. He just, because he practiced it so much, he scored a load of them. So, like, just don't be afraid to miss, you know, and practice your shooting. If you do that,
yeah.
you probably score a few goals. Like, maybe you only score 8 or 10 a season, but that's 8 or 10 goals that you wouldn't have otherwise. Like, you know, we
I
need
mean,
to
I've
play.
been harping on this for years, right?
Yeah.
Last year, Chelsea were eighth in the Premier League in shots taken. That's not good enough. This year, it's only two matches, but they're 12th. We have not signed outside of Nkunku and before him, Giroud. And I guess Ziyech a little bit. We have not signed players that shoot the ball. And it is, I mean, right, Nico, some of the young players you can coach, but it is actually mind-boggling to me how few of, I mean, our midfielders, but also our attackers don't shoot the ball. I've
Yeah.
never seen a team like it that spends so much money, and the one thing they never sign is somebody that shoots the ball three times or more a match. Like, this is very simplistic statistics, and this is not the way to decide how you're a good team. But I swear to God, look at every team that's come in the top two, maybe top three in the Premier League over the last decade. They're all in the top five in shots taken. And it's not like we're not doing well in possession under Tuchel. We were the second, third highest possession teams since basically when he took over. So it's not like we don't have the ball. And we get the ball into the box a lot. We did under Tuchel. We're doing it even more under Pochettino. We're just not shooting it. And it's driving me up a wall. I'm like, I know, Score, you said we can talk about it later, but I want to talk about it now. Like, it is absurd to me. Like, it's actually absurd to me that some of the names that are being thrown around for Chelsea to sign are guys that take less than two shots a match. Yeah, do I think we need a more creative player with Nkunku and I guess to a certain extent Carney hurt? Yeah, I mean, I do. But that type of player is not enough if they're not going to shoot the ball.
Yeah.
It could be a midfielder, it could be attacker, preferably it's both. We don't have that player and it drives me insane. So
Yeah.
now you can continue. Sorry for interrupting.
I've had this issue for years. Like, in every season, I lose my voice shouting at the TV. Like, just shoot. Like, stop messing around. Stop trying to walk it into the net. Just shoot. Like, honestly, like it's so frustrating. Like, it really is frustrating, especially when you watch Frank Lampard, like, who just used to shoot. You get it outside the box, he'd just shoot. Sometimes he wouldn't score. Sometimes it would just be saved. We'll go straight to the keeper. But He shot. He had a shot, and you knew that he would always have a shot, and that meant he got like 15 goals a season at least. Sometimes he got 20 goals a season. Like certainly he'd get like 10 or 15 open play goals a season. We need that. You need that. Every team needs that. I still seen today that we're looking to sign two attackers. Like, and one of them is a creative attacker, and one of them is potentially a striker or a goal scorer, basically. Like, and if we do that, that's fine. Like, if we get the right player, that's fine. We just need some. I just want somebody who's going to go in and just going to try shots. As soon as they get in the Premier League, they're going to try a shot, even if it doesn't go in. Like, you know what I mean? Even Timo Werner used to try and shoot, didn't he? Like, even if he was
Oh,
offside.
Timo wasn't afraid to shoot. I actually like that about Timo. Like, he couldn't finish for his life, but he was courageous. He shot the ball, and we need that so bad. Like, what I would give to have Timo Werner on this current team under Poch, like, I actually think Timo would
I was in
cause
this
a
team.
lot of damage.
If you put him in like where Jack, like actually he'd be the perfect guy to play just off Jackson, wouldn't he? Like if Jackson makes a space, Timo Werner runs in, he just taps it in. Like that's all he has to do. Like, and he's quick, so great on
Even if
counter.
it takes him 5 shots a match, fine. Just somebody shoot it. Anyways, Ola, I want to move to you. What do you think about shooting? Are Score and I just totally off our rockers about worrying about shooters? Or do you think shooting is important? Do you think there's somebody like we could sign that would fix this shooting problem?
I completely agree with you in the shooting thing, because there were several times during the match, Nicholas Jackson, there was a pass he got, and he was running at goal. By the time he shot the ball or tried to shoot the ball, he just barely got the foot on it, and it was an easy save, even though he was very close to goal. And I completely agree. Many times, some people say football is a very complicated sport, which it is, but sometimes it's not that complicated. Many of the goals, Manchester City, Liverpool, Arsenal, many of the goals they score are not clear-cut chances. But at the professional level, or at this level, Premier League level, a lot of players are good shooters of the ball. Obviously, there are still levels to the game. There are still better shooters than others at the professional level. But the point is, if you have a chance to shoot, which means you have some space around you, you are a considerable distance to go, you can get your shot on target, you have a good chance of either forcing a save, getting the ball into the net, or forcing a corner. So it counts as if you force a save, it's a shot on target. If you get the corner, you have a set piece opportunity. There are many things in sports that action leads to others and helps the team. And shooting is one of those things. And I noticed we got the ball into very good areas, actually. Mikhailo Modric got that chance where he shot to the top of his boots, that close to goal. And the ball didn't even go over the boy, it just went up. So there's that. But ultimately, I agree with you that the shooting is extremely important. You don't need to get within 6 yards of goal to shoot. You don't need to get within 12 yards of goal to shoot. If you see the space, you have a clear sight at goal, take your shot. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to add one thing to that too. And this is a Thomas Tuchel lesson, but I think it's true, which is when Antonio Rudiger shot the ball and it skied over the net and broke some windows on its way out of the stadium, what that did beyond just creating like a shot is it meant the other team couldn't counterattack. The other team had to build up. That's what made Frank Lampard shooting so valuable. It wasn't that his shots were of necessarily great quality, and it wasn't that he was a, I mean, he was a superb finisher, but like that's not what made it valuable. It was that you either forced a corner or you made it so the other team couldn't counterattack you. So
Yeah,
sorry to
exactly.
interrupt, but I just wanted to.
I think it's an excellent point, actually. I've talked to Jordan before, and I've mentioned that this same thing we're saying. I've mentioned that crossing the ball has its own value. Many times when people say, "Oh, we just cross the ball," or all he does is cross the ball. I've heard people say about Trent that he's not really creative; he just crosses the ball. A good cross can do a lot for an attacking play. A lot. Yeah. At the end of the day, again, it's skill. If you have good shooters on your team, you would want to shoot the ball more because it means you have a higher chance of scoring than the other team anyway. But yes, there are many things a shot does. A shot signifies that a play has resulted in something. XG, shots, big chances created, all those things. Chances created are dependent on shots. If I put the ball on a plate for Enzo Fernandez, and Enzo Fernandez finds himself 1-on-1 with the keeper 4 yards out, and he stays on the ball, doesn't shoot, and the keeper comes and jumps on the ball, there's no big chance created because no shot is taken. Shot creating actions, goal creating actions, all that is dependent on a shot being taken and sometimes a goal being scored. So that's an excellent point, the shooting thing. I think the Caicedo debut, I agree with Scott that it was not unexpected because he was unfit, but it was a really bad debut. Because the more interesting thing about his debut was he contested about 7 ground duels, won 4, contested 3 area duels, won 2, which is not bad in and of itself. But what makes it so bad was in decisive moments, he was out of sorts. He gave the ball away several times. He completed 31 passes, which means that he got on the ball a considerable amount of time, but he conceded the penalty. He was out of sorts. And I've said this again about players who have been out in the cold, either because they are bench players or they are fringe players. When they pick 11 players who have been out in the cold, or 10 out of 11, or 8 out of 11 players who have not played for a long time, and they play a game, it shows. And many times fans don't realize that these things matter. Yes, he is the British record signing, but being the British record signing doesn't make you Toni Kroos, doesn't make you Haaland. You can't just go, you're the British record signing. I don't expect the things that apply to normal footballers fitness-wise to apply to you. He's still a footballer, and if he hasn't played in a while, it would show. So there was that. His debut was as bad as advertised. There's no getting around that. But we know that players are not their debut performances. João Félix's debut for Chelsea was excellent, and it never really went up from there. So we can't really hold the debut thing. I agree that Lavia is more ready to start for us than Caicedo is. And the good thing is, we don't have to be anxious for when Caicedo plays. It's a 38 game season. This is game week 2. Even if he doesn't play the next 3, 4 games, he will still play a considerable number of games enough to impact the success of the team. So I'm not worried about Caicedo. It was a bit cringe, the performance he put out there, I won't lie. But I'm not worried about him one bit. I think the Lavia signing was a good one because even if we play a pivot of Enzo and Caicedo, we will still need a central midfielder that we can call on. So that's why I think the Lavia signing is extremely valuable for us.
One thing
I'm
I'll add
happy.
to that
Yeah.
too, and this is the point Score made, like because of Caicedo, right? I mean, I keep saying this. We talked about this last week, and I'm just going to keep bringing it up. Caicedo's not Conte; he's a DM,
Yeah.
and he's a DM's DM. Like
Yeah.
that's what he is. And what that does is it means the other midfielders can, and the fullbacks or whoever can push forward. And I think Score is right about Lavia, right? Like. Lavia's passing, I'd like to see him a little bit forward. But the other thing I want to say about Lavia is, and this is kind of a lesson in stats, is that one way to judge how good players are, especially midfielders, are at getting back into their line and like recovery pace is blocks. Last year,
Yeah.
Lavia ranked in the 94th percentile in total blocks, which to me means even if Lavia is further forward, he's gonna get back. Right, like he has that ability, especially if Caicedo is behind him. So I want to
Yeah.
throw it over to Score really quickly. Like Score, so how, what are your thoughts on Lavia? Do you think Lavia kind of fills a necessary hole here? Do you think he's kind of just going to rotate with Enzo? Do you think him and Caicedo are going to be as good together as I do? Like, what are your thoughts here?
I think we'll see a bit of both, honestly, depending on the opposition. I think I do want to see Lavia and Caicedo together. Certainly in games like Luton, whatever, that came too soon. But as an example, you know, Nottingham Forest were playing Nottingham Forest soon as well. Like that's, and that will give a bit of steel to the midfield. And I think Lavia can be a tool to open low blocks alongside Enzo, both of them. It gives you a bit more. It gives you two midfielders who can play balls in behind. And that's more, that makes it more difficult for the opposition because, like, they can't just stop one of them. They have to stop both of them. And that makes it a lot more difficult. And when you've got a player like Raheem Sterling in the form that he's in with his pace, like, you could play playing balls in behind for him. You know, that's dangerous. And then if you can get a, if you can get an attacker to play up top, like to link up with Jackson, like again, you're going to have with pace, and Jackson's got pace as well. If you've got, like, say Jackson plays just off the left, and then you've got the we sign a new striker, and then you've got Sterling on the right or whatever, and then maybe you've got the other new attacker playing in that kind of 10 where Gunker would play. You've got loads, like, well, it depends actually, doesn't it? Because Enzo would play there if you played all three of them, but. But you know what I mean. You know what I'm saying. Like it would just give you a bit more options to break down low blocks, and we need as many options as we can get. To be perfectly honest, like, so we'll see it in some games. We'll see him come off the bench in some games, as well. Like sometimes, if Enzo's like, if you know, I don't know whether this will happen this season, but certainly next season when we're playing two games a week. You might see Enzo coming off in like the 70th minute if we're winning, and Lavia come on in his place. Like, or maybe just Enzo rested and Lavia plays instead of Enzo. Like, if we get to a point where we can afford to rest Enzo, that'd be nice. But, but yeah, so I think it's going to be interesting. Like, some games you'll see a pivot of Caicedo and Enzo, and you'll have like the proper 10, and you'll have like, you know, the 4-2-3-1. Especially once Nkunku is back, I think you'll see a lot of that then. But yeah, I think there'll be a bit of both, and I think Lavia's got huge potential, but he's not reached it yet. Like, but he's got huge potential, and he's working under the right coach, I think, to develop that potential because Pochettino is a master at developing young talent. So yeah, I'm really confident about the midfield once he gets fit. Like, I'm not. I don't judge it, certainly don't judge it on this weekend. Like, it'll be after the international break is when we'll start to see it really take shape, I think. Because then we'll have our full squad together. Then we'll have the midfield will be fit, you know, and sharp and ready to go. And we can go on a run of games then. Our run of games up till kind of November is, it's not easy, but it's not the most difficult. Like, November is a really difficult month. I think we've got Newcastle, Manchester City, and someone else. Another big team in the same month, in successive weeks. So, but that's good. I mean, we'll have a run of games where the players can get used to playing with each other and build up some chemistry, and maybe get a good run of wins together so that we can go into those big games with a bit more confidence and momentum because they're going to be hard games. Like, Newcastle's going to be a hard game. Man City's going to be a hard game. We know. I think Newcastle will be easier than it would have been. I'm not saying it'll be easy, but it'll be easier than it would have been because it'll have Champions League. They'll be right in the middle of the group stages by then. And they're not used to playing two games a week. And their squad, I'm still not convinced their squad is deep enough to, like, sustain over a season with two games a week. Like, that's what, so, you know, we might, that'll give us, that'll help us, I suspect. But of course, Lewis Hall's going to be playing for them, which is going to be, we all know what happens then, don't we? So yeah. So yeah, that's what I think is going to happen. I think we'll see a lot of Lavia this season, but he won't start every game. That's basically it. But I think he'll see over the season. I've said like for months now, the second half of the season we will be better than the first half because the team will have been together for 6 months. They'll have built up chemistry, and Kunku will be back. I think other teams will be a bit more tired having played two games a week. Like, teams are competing with for Europe. And, you know, we'll have had only one game a week. So And I think we'll be able to get a bit of momentum from that. Like it might help us to, well, I think we'll finish the season pretty well. And that, a good finish to the season can actually boost, can give you a big boost up the league, And also it takes momentum into next season if we finish this season well.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with that. I think the other reason why I imagine we'll be better in the second half of the season is Arsenal, Newcastle, Man City, et cetera, will be all playing two matches a week and we'll be playing one. Or sometimes they'll be playing three and we'll be playing two. And I think that matters. The other thing I want to say about Lavia is, and I said this in my Twitter thread about him, Lavia's numbers as a DM are pretty average. Lavia's numbers as a 19-year-old DM are incredible. And I really think Lavia is a guy that in two full seasons is going to be considered kind of just a generational DM. Not just similar to like how Declan Rice rose, right? I mean, Declan Rice's first breakout year at West Ham, people were kind of like, eh, he's good. He's good, but he needs experience. And I think that's how we'll talk about Lavia. And by this past summer, Declan Rice was what I think is very fairly a $100 million player or 100 million pound player. And so I'm not, I like Lavia signing. I'm frustrated because it seems like Chelsea fans think he's going to be generational right away. And we know what happens when he isn't, because it's the same thing that happened to Caicedo after Caicedo hasn't played for a month, which is Chelsea Twitter goes bonkers and says this player will never be Chelsea quality. But I trust Poch to develop him. So, all right, we're talking about second half of the season. Do you guys think there's going to be more attackers? And if so, or more players in general, right? I know it seems like Chelsea are about to sign Petrovic from the MLS, who's this amazing shot-stopping goalkeeper. And there's kind of rumors of other players. So, what do you guys think about the future of the transfer window? Do you think Chelsea need to continue spending money to build a squad that can get Champions League this year? Or do you think, are you guys kind of the let's hold off and let's let the squad as it is, maybe as it is plus Petrovic develop?
I think the what the Petrovic signing shows me is the involvement of goalkeepers in everything, proceedings, play, the team's success, is not as much as many people think. I don't think Chelsea is buying Petrovic thinking that he's the next Alisson or the next Ederson. I think they know very well what they are getting. But Petrovic is very tall and he's a very good shot stopper. And while we can say he plays in the MLS, it's a goalkeeper's job doesn't change really based on league because he's facing shots anyway, and he doesn't have control over shots taken at him. All he can do is react to shots that he faces. It to be the same thing at Chelsea. So I think exactly. Messi also plays in the MLS, so we have to put some respect on the MLS. Ultimately, I think a goalkeeper's job is the same everywhere. If you're a good shot stopper, it will show in your numbers. If you're a poor shot stopper, it will show in your numbers. Petrovic is a good shot stopper. He mostly would make short passes to his center backs and his full backs, and he will make the odd long ball into the center of the pitch or try to find one of the wingers. He may not have necessarily a high completion rate, but by being a Chelsea goalkeeper, he will have a high completion rate because he'll make a lot of more short passes, and there probably will be more passing options for him that are even longer. So I don't mind the Petrovic signing. I'm not freaked out that he's not that good on the ball because I think ultimately, I said it about David De Gea last season. I said it's not. When many people blamed him for Man's failures, I laughed. I laughed hard because a goalkeeper cannot be the difference between success and failure at this level. It simply cannot be, and I stand by that. There were many underperformances in the Manchester United squad last season, but many people didn't look past De Gea because they felt he was not something that they wanted him to be. Andre Onana has not kept the clean sheet this season, and he's supposed to be better on the ball. Ultimately, I don't mind the Petrovic signing. As for forwards, or rather, I like the Petrovic signing. As for forwards, I think Chelsea feels the need to get another forward through the door. I don't think it's necessary, partly because I think I don't really know how to put it, but let me just say we have chosen the situation that we are in because we had players, we decided to do a clear out, we've done the clear out, we brought new players in. We spent £872 million on this squad and we brought a lot of forwards through the door. So I don't think more forwards really is what we need. I think what we need is maybe one person who will be tasked with chance creation, who, when the chips are down, we can get the ball to that person, make runs off him, and expect him to make things happen. Enzo may be that guy. I think Enzo will have to be that guy, considering the situation the squad is in. But ultimately, I don't think we should be desperate to get another forward through the door. I like the idea of Dusan Vlahovic because he's a center forward. He's a center forward, center forward. I like the idea of a winger. I looked at Jeremy Doku, who Manchester City seems to be signing, and he seems like he fits the Grealish mode, who is a high volume dribbler but can also retain possession. I don't think we need someone who retains possession. I think we need someone who can make things happen. Risky passes, high volume chance creation. So I really don't know who that would be. All the options I have moved this summer and none of them came to Chelsea. Yes, Ryan Cherki is my guy. He hasn't moved. He's still at Lyon. I need Chelsea to get him. I pray Chelsea get him. But I really don't know if we're going to get Cherki done. The thing that surprises me about Cherki, this is what I'll end with, is many people don't seem interested in him. Many people have him as third choice. They prefer Mohamed Kudus more. And each to his own is what I'll say. But from what I saw about Cherki last season, he was 19 and he led League One in many chance creation metrics. And that was a league that had Lionel Messi, had Neymar, had Mbappe. He was very, very good. And I think he's exactly what we need, actually. But I see us getting something along the lines of what? I don't know. I actually can't think of it. I think the need for a new forward is not that pronounced, but we do need someone to create chances consistently for us.
So what I'll say about Cherki is, first off, I think Alex Goldberg describes it perfectly. I haven't seen a player with Eden Hazard energy ever until I saw Ryan Cherki again. Right? Cherki has that energy. Cherki creates chances out of absolutely nothing. I think next summer, Chelsea will go all in for Ryan Cherki. I think right now, and I think this is the reason why we haven't been strongly linked, is Poch wants all of his attackers to press hard. And Cherki just is a hard presser. And I don't think that's a permanent thing, right? Like, I mean, we even saw with Dele Alli, who was never an amazing presser. But Poch wants to build the foundation upon attackers and players that are going to work really, really hard. And it would not surprise me if Cherokee's a Chelsea player next summer. But I think right now, I just don't see it. So I'm going to move it over to you, Score. Like, is there an attacker you've heard where you think, you know what, this guy, even with Nkunku and Carney eventually coming back, this guy is going to be a permanent player for Chelsea? Is there a guy that you're just like, I want this player and I'll stop at nothing? Because I know for Ola, it's Cherokee. For me, it's between Cherokee and Kudus. So, Score, I'm interested in who it is for you.
Yeah, Cherokee's a really, a huge talent, massive talent. I've heard some things about his attitude which concern me. Like, I don't want players who are going to be disruptive or like who have an ego, like, you know, no matter how talented they are. So it would need to depend on that with him. But the talent is undoubtedly there, right? Without any question. So if we were just buying on talent alone, absolutely. Like, I really like him. I really liked Michael Olise. I was gutted when we couldn't sign him. Absolutely gutted. I think he's incredible talent. I think he's got a release clause in his new contract, but apparently he prefers to join Spurs, which I don't understand.
What I will say about the Lise thing is it is the most reality television Premier League saga to ever occur. Right? So this guy has a release clause in his contract. Chelsea triggered the release clause, but the problem is the release clause must be triggered by Elise himself. And because it wasn't, basically what Crystal Palace said is, Michael, if you trigger this, we're going to bust Chelsea for tapping you up. If you don't trigger this, here's this new contract you can sign. I mean, it is the most like reality television, like Beagle, like BS signing, but it was amazing. So anyways, I'll let you continue. I was dying laughing when I read about this.
I've always said that when Chelsea do an all or nothing, which we will absolutely do at some point with this ownership, it's going to be the best one ever. Like, because Chelsea's box office, it doesn't matter. I've always said this, doesn't matter who the owner is, doesn't matter who the manager is, doesn't matter what the players are. Chelsea Football Club is just a soap opera. Like, it's like a roller coaster, up and down. Like, expect the unexpected. Like, I've lived under three different owners of Chelsea and it's never changed. Like, it's just part of our club DNA. But other than that, I mean, I like this guy, Barcola, yeah. PSG want him as well. He prefers PSG. He's another one I'd be happy if we signed him. It's a difficult one. Like, there isn't like I mean, the one name that I would have wanted would be Elise. That would be like my number one choice, but that's not happening. So I just got to trust the club scouts, really. Like, as long as we don't sign Brennan Johnson, I don't really want us to sign him. But I mean, I'll back it if we do. Like, he scored 8 Premier League goals last season for a poor Nottingham Forest side. Like, he shoots. And I'm intrigued by these links with Balogun as well from Arsenal. Done a bit of research on him. He takes on a lot of shots. Like, he creates a lot of chances for himself as well. He played in a really defensive side last year where he barely got any chances created for him. And he can score penalties, which is another thing which people kind of dismiss, but it's really important. Like, as we saw at the weekend, like, I want somebody to penalty and we'll score it. Like,
100%. Yeah, I would like
I've never understood people that dismiss scoring penalties.
Exactly.
Ever. They're 3 goals. I've never understood it. Like, listen, I know all 3 of us probably have differing opinions on Jorginho, but what you can say about the guy, like, generally speaking, he scored his penalty. And, like, I know that seems an absurd thing to judge a defensive midfielder on, and I don't judge him on that because of that. But, like, I miss having the penalty taker that you knew 9 times out of 10 would hop, skip, and jump it into the goal. Yep. Like, when I saw Enzo take it, that, I mean, I'm not going to get into this, but that was, he guessed right and still missed the penalty. Like, that's a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, so I would like a good, anyways, continue.
Ampa had to take the same penalty 3 times in a game, and he scored every single one of them, all 3 of them. Now, that is difficult. Like, when you're the same keeper 3 times consecutively, like, that means they've had a chance to see everything you can do. Like the odds increasingly favour the goalkeeper, and he still scored it. So, in Hazard, I think he missed 1 penalty for Chelsea, I think, or 2 in his entire time.
Yeah, over 8 years.
For 8 years, yeah. Exactly. And one of them, he scored the rebound anyway. So, like, it didn't matter. I think, no, both of them he scored the rebound, I think. Like, so it didn't matter anyway. But, yeah, I mean, like, nowadays, taking penalties is more difficult because the technology that people have. Goalkeepers can watch videos of where players put their penalties and all of that. Like, and do much better preparation. So it's not as easy as it used to be. It's not a given for me anymore. Like, But man, I mean, somebody can come in and just, you know, they're going to score when they take a penalty. Like, that's priceless. Like, and this guy scored 7 penalties last season, right? People say, oh, penalty goals don't count. Well, actually, they do, because if we'd scored a penalty goal at the weekend, we would have won the game, probably. Or
sorry,
at least.
Sorry. But the thing with penalty goals is,
I'm a fan of this interest in Balogun if it's the right price. I wouldn't pay 50, 60 million for him, but if it's like 40 million, 30, 40 million, I would go for it because I think he would get goals for us and he would make goals for us as well. And he takes shots on, which is what we want. Like he's not, he would link up really well with Jackson. Like, Jackson would score more goals playing with him than he would without than you know than he would without him. I think.
Yeah,
Like
I just want to say
pulls me apart.
the other thing about penalties is many people say, oh, this certain player doesn't. Actually, when you're talking about forwards, strikers, we say, oh, penalties, non-penalty goals per game. A penalty has the same effect. A penalty from a goal, a penalty goal has the same effect on a game that a non-penalty goal does. It changes the game. If the other team was trying to defend, they have to come out to do something because now they've conceded a goal. So I think penalties are just as important as every other thing in the sport. And football fans really do hold certain unimportant things in high regard. People say, oh, last season, when people said Haaland scored 36 goals, but seven of them were penalties. And then they said Harry Kane was extremely impressive for Spurs because he scored 30 goals with Spurs. Harry Kane missed two of the penalties he took last season. If he had scored two of those penalties, he would have been closer to Haaland. I mean, the point is, like you said, yesterday we nailed the goal, we got a penalty. Enzo stepped up and took a very bad penalty. It wasn't just a good save from Areola. He took a very bad penalty because he showed Areola exactly where he was going to play the penalty. Because Areola was then moving before he struck the ball and he gets right. So I don't think Enzo. I also saw people say that he took the penalty of Nicholas Jackson. I didn't particularly notice that happened, so I will not really make comments on that. But I think in the absence of a designated taker, the striker should probably take it anyway. But yeah.
I mean, I agree with Alon. I think actually, and this is a sidebar, but it's the same thing with set pieces. Like people discount set piece assists and set piece goals. I mean, Mason Mount's a key example of it, but like, this isn't a Mount discussion. Look at what happened when Chilwell went to the bench yesterday. Our set pieces suck.
Yeah.
So I would kill, like, and I know Enzo for free kicks is really good, but I would kill for more good set piece takers or say with penalty takers. But so score to your point kind of about like Balogun. So like it seems to me like Balogun out of all the attackers we've been linked to is the most likely to happen. So do you think that kind of solves the problems until Nkunku and Carney get back? Do you what is his role when those guys get back?
I have this idea that maybe we, if we signed him, we would probably play him and Jackson. And Jackson can play even in behind him, but he can also play coming in off the left rather than kind of as a nine, you know what I mean? And Jackson, when he's playing with somebody, I think will score more goals than when he's playing on his own. So it would have, signing someone like Balogun would have the effect of a score of Jackson scoring more goals, and I think Balogun would score goals because he's that kind of player we're looking for who takes shots on, like, and he can make chances for himself as well. And he scores penalties. Like I'm sure he would be our penalty taker if he signed for us. We would score more goals if we signed him. We would take more chances. Like we would actually win the games that maybe we should that we should win. I'm not saying he's going to be like Erling Haaland, but he would get at least 50. I reckon he'd get 15, 20 Premier League goals, maybe. Like, if we with the chances that we create with like Enzo, Labia, whatever, feeding him with, and even more when Nkunku comes back. I mean, you could have Nkunku, Jackson, and Balogun all in the team, and they can all score goals, and they could all link up together, and they could even like Balogun and sorry, not Balogun. Jackson and Kungu can even swap places. Like, you know what I mean? Then you've got that. If you've got a fluid front three, which could, you, three of them can score goals, or front four, sorry, and three of them can score goals, and the other one is a creator, like even Raheem Sterling can score goals, then the opposition have real problems because they don't know who to mark, right? If they mark one, that somebody else is going to get in space and score a goal. Like, it just creates more problems for the opposition. And that's what you want because it means that even if one doesn't score, the other person might score, right? And if they've got Enzo Fernandez behind them, freed up with Caicedo protecting him, like passing the ball around, Reece James will be back by then as well, like hopefully getting his crosses in, you know, that could be a really dangerous team. Like, so That's kind of, I'm not saying he's like the complete, he's the savior, but I think he would improve our goal scoring significantly. Because he's somebody that likes to take on shots, and that's what we need.
Yeah. So, okay, I'm going to kind of last question here to both of you, and then we'll wrap up and pray for the best on Friday. But it seems like all three of us, the long-term future, we're pretty happy about, right? When everybody's healthy, it seems like we all kind of agree that it'll be good. But this West Ham match, and like we all saw it, Twitter was, for lack of a better word, and if kids are listening to this, you can mute right now. Twitter was a hellhole after the West Ham loss. So what do you guys make of, because for me, like, I'm not even super worried about the short-term future. I think the point Score made earlier, we have a pretty easy schedule coming on. And by the time it gets hard, all these other teams we're going to face are playing 2 matches a week. So I guess I didn't like the West Ham match. I was frustrated with how we lost it, but it isn't the most long-term concerning thing to me. But what are your guys' thoughts? Like, what do you think about Luton on Friday? Are you guys super worried about the short term? What are your thoughts?
I think my I won't say I expect the Luton game to be easy, but that may be a bit arrogant. I agree. I'm not worried about the short term or the long term because Pochettino is a very good manager. We have very good players. We created 4 clear-cut chances against Liverpool, just couldn't finish. We actually created like 1.7 XG again, if you remove the penalty against West Ham, which wasn't good, but wasn't so bad. It's just that we had some 6% of the ball. So that has to be put into context. I have not actually watched any Luton game this season. So I actually can't say how good I think they will be. I did say that I think Luton would get 3 points off a big 16 this season. And I hope it's not us, but I am confident against Luton. I think that's a home game as well. I'm generally confident in that game. I don't think any of the things we saw here are things we need to worry about against Luton. I just think we need to call a spade and the West Ham really bad. But that's gone. We don't face West Ham on Friday. If we have this same kind of performance against Luton, then we have a conversation to have. But we should be able to get a comfortable win against Luton.
Yeah, I'm not worried. Certainly, I mean, you've got to. I mean, I was just thinking about Arsenal. Their 21-22 season, they lost their first three games. Like, and everyone was talking about them as relegation candidates, and like Arteta out. But the second half of that season, they came really good, and they very nearly qualified for the Champions League. Like, it was like I think the penultimate game, like they failed. Like, they got fifth in the end. And they lost their first three games. And they're in a similar position that we are in that they were rebuilding at the time with young talent, and they got better over the season as they developed as a team and they built team spirit and they built chemistry and they had a few bad experiences and they learned from them. And I kind of feel like we're in a position like that now where we might have a few bad days, especially in the first half of the season. But we will learn from them. Like, I mean, there was a thing today I saw on Instagram. I think it was one of the players posted on Instagram, and then you had literally half the squad replying, supportive, being encouraged, being positive. And I was like, we didn't see this at all last season or the season before. Like it was like all of them are like, we're a squad, we're a team, we're friends, we're together. Like, we're going to get through this. We believe in each other. Like, it just showed to me a little glimpse of like there is really good team spirit here. There is a lot of unity here. There's no egos. They're all fighting for each other. They all want each other to succeed. And that's good. That's a good thing because ultimately that will get you through these difficult periods and it will get you, and eventually, like, you'll get through and you'll have good periods. Like, these are kind of the experiences that build character, like, for young players. So I'm very positive over the season we will get better. I think I think we can beat Luton. I think, like, honestly, I think Pochettino will go back to like quite interested, like, for that. I think we'll have, like, Chilwell back at left back. I think Silva will be out of the team. I think Lavia might start. I think he might play Conor Gallagher as the 10. We haven't talked about him today, actually, but I thought he was good again. And we weren't so good when he came off either. And then, like, maybe play Madsen as the left winger, or even Mudryk. Like, and I think we should be able to beat Luton. We really should. Like, I don't, I don't, I can't, I just can't accept, at home, especially, like, with the crowd behind us. If we play like we did against Liverpool, we will beat Luton. Like, we will. Like, we scored goals in both of our games so far. We haven't, like, failed to score yet. So we can score goals. We just need to have a bit more confidence. And Pochettino again is the right manager for this because he's experienced. He's not going to panic. He's not going to get overwhelmed by negativity. He's not going to collapse under pressure because he's managed at big clubs. He knows what it's like. And he's the perfect manager to get these young players through a difficult defeat and get them through to, hopefully beat Luton, because I think we should beat Luton. Like, we're good enough to beat them. We've got to believe in ourselves. We're not a bad side. We haven't become a bad side because of one bad half against West Ham. Like, we've just got to have some confidence in ourselves. And just that first win will be really, really important as well. Once you get the first win, that will change momentum a lot, especially for young players as well. Once you get the first win, that's the big hurdle. Then you realize you can win games together, right? Then you've got AFC Wimbledon at home next week, which we should win. Like, honestly, there's no excuse not to win that game. And then you've got Nottingham Forest away, which will be more difficult. But again, it's a game that we could win. If we can win those three games before the international break, that's a really good way to go into the international break. If we lose all of those games or two of those games, that's then, it's a problem. We've got to do. I mean, I'm a short-term problem, not a long-term problem, but it's a problem. Like, but we might have new attacking signings back for the Nottingham Forest game, let's hope we do. So our attack might be better for that game, so we might win that game anyway. So yeah, I'm not worried. I'm not worried at the moment. West Ham's a difficult game away from home, especially at the beginning of the season. And they've got a much more experienced team than us as well. So it was always going to be a difficult game. And Liverpool's a difficult game, first game of the season. Even with their defence being so poor as it was, it's a tough game to go into as your first game of the season. So we've had a couple of difficult games to start with, but we've now got a little run where we can put some wins together and get some momentum. And I feel pretty confident that we will. Yeah. And I agree that Gallagher is always good. I've been so impressed with him this season. His pressing is brilliant. His work ethic is incredible. Like, I just really like him. Like, he's just my kind of player. And it's notable that he has started every game so far. And he can score goals. Again, he's somebody else who shoots when he's in an attacking position. Like, put him in like the kind of eight, the further forward, near the attack. He'll take shots on from outside the box. And again, we need that. Like, he scored loads of goals from outside the box for Palace. Like, he scored some for us last season. So let him do that. Let him take shots. Tell him just to shoot. Don't say, don't, I don't care if you miss. Just have a go. If you're in a good area, just have a go. Don't, and I won't get cross with you if you miss, because you'll have had a go. Like, and eventually he'll score one because he's good at those. So he scored a great one against Crystal Palace last year. Like, that was a great strike. I was really happy with that goal because it was like somebody actually took a shot, like, from distance. Like, nobody ever does that. So yeah, I mean, like, I don't think he will leave. I think Pochettino likes him and wants to keep him. I think that one of the reasons Lewis Hall was sold was because Pochettino wants to keep Gallagher. I think absolutely that was one of the reasons. And if that's what Pochettino wants, I'm okay with that because I like Conor Gallagher, and he's, and he wants to, I just love that he wants to fight for his place. Even though he knows he's not, like, he's got so much competition in that area, he's still like, I'm staying, I'm going to fight for my place. Like, you want to get in starting, you got to get past me. Like, I love that. you can't buy that kind of mentality, right? And he's a Chelsea fan. Like, it's his dream to play for Chelsea, and he's like, he's not going to give up on it. Like, I just love that about him. And he will have his moment. If he stays this season, he will have a moment, which is a big moment for the season for Chelsea, where he'll score an important goal. Maybe it's in a cup semi-final or something, but he'll earn that because he works so hard and he doesn't give up. Even when he doesn't play or whatever, he doesn't give up. So I think we need more players like him in our squad. So, and if he ever wants to leave in the future, then fine, that's fine. But like, I'm happy to have him in the squad. Yeah. I know you like him as well, Jordan. So you could say some stuff about him there as well.
Yeah. And I think it's going to be tough for anybody to top that score. So thank you. And I'll end it here. But generally speaking, I agree. To me, Connor Gallagher is actually the next player I would get on a jersey if I was confident he would be here. He is a weird profile because he's older and you generally don't see the improvement in statistical profiles amongst players his age like you are with Connor Gallagher. But what's interesting about Gallagher is the second he was loaned to a Premier League team, so West Brom, is the second you saw his profile improving drastically every year. We've seen it the first two matches. He's played in a pivot and hasn't cost us either match. Like, yeah, he was at fault for that goal against West Ham, that first goal on the set piece, but that's not because he was playing the pivot. That was a set piece where he was overmatched on height. I actually think there was a zonal marking issue on that set piece. But nonetheless, like, his profile's improving. If you watch him, he's improving. So I really like Gallagher. He, I think, was second on the team in chances created last year. Like, I don't know. I really think Gallagher is the guy that it seems like we want to sell him really badly. And by we, I mean the board, but that Pochettino and Gallagher don't, like, Gallagher doesn't want to leave. Pochettino doesn't want Gallagher to leave. So I think with Carney out, with Nkunku out, without any new signings, Gallagher's the 10 to score his point. But I'll end the Gallagher talk there because I love the guy. I am one of the guys that every time somebody makes an argument about why it's smart to sell Gallagher, I respond, even though I'm annoying about it. So I'm not going to keep harping on this point, but I'll just kind of sum up that I think the West Ham result was a bad loss. I think there's reasons to be concerned, but I don't think it's a loss that's so bad and so surprising that it changes my evaluation on the season, right? Chelsea need to shoot more. Frankly, and I mean this in the best way and in the most respect because he's done so much for us, Thiago Silva should not be starting most Premier League matches for Chelsea, right? These aren't new things. And to me, once these things, like, over time happen, we'll be fine. So I think I'm going to end the podcast there by just saying, like, keep the faith. I do think the skies are bluer than most people think when it comes to Chelsea, and we're getting close to turning it around. So with that said, everybody, keep the blue flag flying high, and we will talk to you after the Luton match.